On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's hot and it's everywhere. Online, on TV, in the papers, and on page after page of glossy magazines, celebrity news. Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears, Beckham, and Posh. The images are inescapable, and so is the gossip. Maybe it's just good, cheesy fun. Maybe it's Americans withdrawing into an alternate unreality of gowns and red carpet and drunken gods. This hour on Point, another look at America's celebrity mania. We'll be joined in a moment by one of America's foremost cultural critics, Camille Paglia, and later this hour by the man behind one of the hottest celebrity sites on the web, PerezHilton.com. But first, joining me from New Haven, Connecticut, is Jake Halpern. He's author of Fame Junkies, The Hidden Truths Behind America's Favorite Addiction. Jake Halpern, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Tom.
So there you are, my friend. You've covered Hollywood for NPR for several years. You went deep on the whole fame obsession thing. I mean, it's not new. In fact, it may be as old as apes, but what's going on here, and has it reached new heights, or are we just thinking so?
No, I think it has, and I think you're right to focus on the extent to which it is metastasized into the news, so that now when you turn on CNN or MSNBC, you're just as likely to see Paris Hilton as you are to see coverage of the war in Iraq. And there's some scary stats. One of the ones that I think is the most striking involves the Martha Stewart scandal back in 2004. That year, the three major nightly news networks, which at the time were Tom Brokaw, Dan Rather, and Peter Jennings,
right,
devoted 130 combined minutes to Martha Stewart and just 25 minutes to the genocide in Darfur. So I think that you pose this question at the beginning, which is this just frivolous and benign and where's the harm? I think it's important to bear in mind that these stories are eclipsing real news stories in a venue that traditionally did not cater to these stories at all.
I mean, it's just too big a cliche for public radio to be tutting, you know, about Britney and Lindsay Lohan. And still, it's a really interesting phenomena here. We wonder, you know, what's being displaced? Is this kind of a self-medication? Is it healthy? Do people need a break from the news? But you look out there and you see celebrity magazines, the only ones with growing circulation, more people watching American Idol than watching the nightly news on the three networks combined. I mean, it is huge.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think there are a number of explanations, one of which I think is interesting is the extent to which our loneliness or isolation is fueling all of this. So I think Robert Putnam made this argument in Bowling Alone that we go to fewer family dinners, we join fewer clubs, we kind of live these isolated Dilbert-esque lives. And to some extent, all these celebrities who we ostensibly know on a first basis, name basis, Tom and Katie and J-Lo, are filling that void. And there's one, I'll just tell you one study that I think is really cool. They did out at San Diego State University where they gave these college students this personality test in which it ostensibly told them what kind of social life they could expect.
Okay.
And then they arbitrarily told half the group, you know, based on these results, you're going to have lots of friends, you're going to have a robust social life, things are going to be good. And then they told the other half, you know, based on your answers, you can really expect more loneliness, fewer friends, smaller social networks.
This is what they told the participants. Yeah.
And this was bogus. It was, you know, they just randomly put them into two groups. And then immediately they said, you can meet with a health expert and get some valuable, you know, health information, or you can read People magazine. And they found that the people that were told to expect a life of loneliness were twice as likely right then and there to say, give me the People magazine. And I think that to some extent that same scenario is playing out on a larger scale throughout the country, which is as we are, you know, increasingly feeling lonely or our social worlds are shrinking, that we gravitate towards this, as you said, self-medicate, whatever.
Or what you describe as parasocial relationships, eclipsing real relationships sometimes, relationships with characters on TV or in the movies.
Yeah, and we've all had the situation where, you know, you go to Starbucks and the couple next to you, they're talking about maybe their cousin and they're talking about Tom and Katie for a long time, and then maybe they go back to their cousin, but it's as if they're all part of the social network.
You did some study, Jake, you did some study of your own here with 650 fifth graders in Rochester, New York. Tell us about some of the findings that came out of that little survey.
Yeah, so I was kind of inspired by American Idol. You see these kids on TV who are so desperate to become famous, and I think there's a temptation to say, well, this is an extreme. This is an aberration. Kids really don't want fame this much. So I did this survey of these kind of all-American kids, and what we found was we asked them, if you could press a magic button that could make you stronger, smarter, more beautiful, or famous, which would you pick? And we found that boys picked fame almost as often as intelligence, and girls actually picked fame more often than intelligence.
Fame rather than intelligence. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of smart people, but a few are famous, so maybe it's a more elite status. On the other hand, you asked them about job options that they might go for.
Yeah, this was the one that really threw me for a loop. We asked them, which job do you think you'd most like to have when you grow up? And we gave them a pretty good list of options. We said you could be U.S. Senator, you could be president of Harvard or Yale, you could be CEO of a major Fortune 500 company,
yep, yep.
You could be a U.S. Navy SEAL, or you could be an assistant to a celebrity.
An
Not
assistant.
The celebrity, like the person that carries the bags.
A gopher.
Right? A gopher. Okay. And we found that among girls in particular, they picked that choice among higher than any other choice. They picked it twice as often as president of Harvard or Yale, three times as often as a U.S. senator, and four times as often as CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
To be a celebrity personal assistant. You found a pattern here in the kind of backgrounds was it the girls or all the kids? Who, you know, you gave them an option of a pretty famous fellow or Paris Hilton to spend some time with.
Right. We gave them – so said, who do you want to have dinner with, basically? And we gave them, again, a long list, included Albert Einstein, President Bush, Jesus Christ, 50 Cent, Paris Hilton, J-Lo. There are a lot of celebrities, too,
yeah,
which could have potentially – and J-Lo was the clear winner.
Above Albert Einstein, above Jesus
Christ.
Crushed
Albert Einstein. Albert – I mean, like, seven times more than Albert Einstein.
Yeah, she's more lively, maybe.
Yeah. But Jesus Christ, I mean – The funny thing was is that if you looked at – because we played with the data and I was wondering like what kinds of kids are especially likely to pick the celebrities. And when you looked at the kids who had answered earlier in the survey that they said they were lonely or they were bullied, things like this, it definitely spiked in terms of they'd rather have dinner with Paris or 50 Cent than they would with some of the people you'd think they would.
Right. Right. Okay. So you've written a whole book about it. How do you come away from it? A harmless diversion, or are we sort of taking ourselves down a rabbit hole to escape the world around us, or both?
Well, I should say that I'm not like calling for some kind of fatwa here or we're not going
right,
to – I mean,
right.
I get sucked into this stuff as much as anyone. I think that was the starting point of my book is, you know, I'm definitely one of those people that's walking in the airport and sees the, you know, the latest segment on Brad and Angelina's Tropical Vacation and I'm watching it and there's that voice in the back of my head that's saying, why are you watching it? But I'm still watching it. And I think that where I come down at it ultimately is it's fine in moderation and it's fine when it's within – the context of the traditional celebrity magazine. So, like, I've got no problem with Us Weekly or Entertainment Tonight. I think the problem is when it creeps in or metastasizes, however you want to say it, into traditional news realms, places that we go to find out what's going on in the world, and we can't get to that information because it's being cluttered by Paris Hilton's latest arrest. I think that's where it's troubling. And the other thing is, of course, you know we live in a society that's obsessed with celebrities,
yeah.
But when you have kids saying they'd rather be famous than smart. You have all these people out there that are so worried about family values. Maybe they should start paying attention to what role celebrity plays into that.
Lloyd Grove writing in the Los Angeles Times about Paris Hilton, despite a lack of any discernible talent, education, scruples, manners, modesty, or underpants, she is bigger than ever. Well, it's growing. Jake Halpern, stand by. Camille Paglia joins us from Philadelphia, one of America's foremost cultural critics, professor of humanities and media studies at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia, columnist for Salon.com. And a very welcome guest on this show. Camille Paglia, welcome back. Good to have you. What do you think is going on here? You're a big fan of this stuff.
Yes. Hi, Tom and Jake. Well, I share Jake's sense of dismay at the way very young adolescents are, you know, have been swept into this all-consuming world of celebrity. I'm a tremendous fan myself, though, of the tabloid tradition of sensationalism, which is, after all, has populist roots. It goes back to the penny papers and of the 19th century, the period of yellow journalism. That it was where you had the big, William Randolph Hearst and all those entrepreneurs were discovering that that the working class actually has an insatiable hunger for motifs of sex and violence and celebrity.
So now, is it where, the opium where, of the masses then, Camille, or is well, it or is it opening us up to something fundamentally human? What?
Well, I think that's what's happened is, and here Jake and I are absolutely at one, is where this invaded traditional news gathering. And I think that where that happened is, of course, the O.J. trial of 1994, mm-hmm. where the New York Times tried to hold the line against the trial, tried to report it in factual terms, and the tabloids were at their. It was a moment of great glory for them. People had to turn to the National Enquirer or the Star to find the truth of what was happening, to find the pictures, to learn about Nicole Simpson, her, all kinds of snapshots.
And under
of her.
That pressure, the walls came down in mainstream media,
that's
and in it roared.
That's when it happened, and step by step since then, we found the diminution of time, on the network news and so on. So I think that another huge problem for me is that in the great period of Hollywood, we had real stars, we had major stars, major personalities, who were mature in their own way.
Jake, you've been looking at the kind of deep roots here that chimpanzees even love to stare at pictures of the dominant chimp in their pack.
Yeah, they'll actually give up food or pay in order to stare at these pictures. They built this elaborate contraption where the monkeys can look one way and see pics of the dominant monkey, so they can look the other way and get food, and they give up the food. So,
this should show, therefore, that what we're looking at here, this phenomenon, is not merely concentrated in contemporary America. Mm-hmm. It's a universal human trait to be drawn. This has been my argument for years: to be drawn toward images of power and beauty and glamour, and that's what's happening here. When a young girl today, as Jake has found, would like to be a star's assistant, I would argue that girl wants to be part of the magic aura. Okay, that star exudes. I think there is some strange that we in anthropologists will call it mana. Okay, that comes out, a radiation from people in the limelight. Unfortunately, the limelight will kill you, and that's the point. We create these stars, and then we enjoy to tear them down. There's a kind of ritual sacrifice going on.
Right. So there's their sacrifice, but I mean, what about us in this process? It goes way back. Babies as young as 8 months old will stare at an attractive face longer than an average-looking face, so
exactly.
We're wired for this.
Exactly. This was my argument against the feminists of the 80s who were saying that that beauty is a myth that is imposed by a sexist society on us. In point of fact, there is some universal attraction toward beauty. The problem right now is we're living in a time where the celebrities, the stars, are very small. They're girly. They're teens. They're shallow. They're superficial. And that's why we're all getting a sense of nausea from this. And education has failed. Right? Our schools have failed to give young people culture, real art, history, geography. Okay, and there's a vacuum in education right now. It's all based on feel-good therapy.
And the stars are too puny.
That's why the celeb culture has become this monstrous tumor.
Right. Jake, you say there was a time in the 60s, you asked people who the celebrities or big stars in their lives were, and they picked out big names like Gandhi and Churchill.
Right, well, and now the... And now that's changed. It's Donald Trump and Michael Jordan and Bono and Arnold Schwarzenegger. And
I can't help wondering what role technology plays in this, though, because there's so many more paths into our brains today. I mean, the web has put things, all over the internet where people are glued all the time, on your digital, your cell phone, no doubt, TV and all that cable.
The web has drained energy from the entertainment medium, from performance, and also from news. So this is why the once crucial network news shows have waned, because we can get news around the clock from the web. And this is the problem, is that the whole establishment of news gathering, of objective fact assessment, all of those skills, basic skills to journalism, have now been marginalized because of the ready access of news information on the web. And this, I think we are facing a kind of a crisis here.
I would just add to Tom's point about going back to the 60s and looking at the way that our most idolized leaders have changed, thinking back to the Kennedy-Nixon debate, when the people that listened to it on the radio thought Nixon won and the people that watched it on TV thought Kennedy won. Uh-huh. And I think that with the rise of television, our exposure to the people in the public sector has changed. So we're seeing them on TV. So the kind of charisma that we associate with celebrities has become increasingly important, and the people that we're kind of drawn in by. And that's a result of technology. I think in the past, if you read about them or just heard about them on the radio, they wouldn't exist. They wouldn't kind of have that kind of influence on us. But now, because it's so much TV and image-based, we're much more susceptible to the charisma of entertainers.
And I
want to support what Jake just said, because as a teacher at an art school, this is a terrible problem for my students who are going into the performing arts. I hear all the time, all anyone wants now in auditions is the image. They want the way you look. It's no longer a matter of how well you dance, how well you act, how well you play an instrument. Okay, it is what you project in terms of the visual look that is part of the heritage of television, just what Jake said.
Well, again, I don't want to be a public radio cliche here either, but you can't help wondering if this displaces more important conversation, if this is a kind of a diversion, if this is a kind of a, you know, junkie needle in our arms.
It's escapism. Look, I mean, the news is filled with atrocities and deaths, firebombings, beheadings, and so on. I mean, just think for a moment about classic Hollywood. That was a great period also of star worship. I mean, an enormously important film like The Philadelphia Story, 1940, this dream of an elite family having a wedding.
But you had to get up and get in the car, Camille, and travel somewhere to see it, and it was just 2 hours, then you were done.
Hitler had gone into Czechoslovakia and Poland. A war had broken out. Okay, we were still feeling the effects of the Depression. So it is true that entertainment often functions as an escapism, okay, for people who are under the shadow of in this case, terrorism.
But you just wonder if technology now makes the escapism inescapable. We've got a lot of listeners who want to join the conversation. Kaylin in Boston, you're on the air, Kaylin.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
So first of all, I have to say, Camille, I agree just about 100% with everything you said. And Jake, I have some questions about your research. I feel like, first of all, this isn't just an American problem, as Camille said. Let's look at David Beckham. I mean,
it's global, absolutely.
And then you talked about American Idol, and Camille, you said this already, but yes, American Idol has more viewers than the nightly news. But as Camille said, people get up in the morning, they go, they turn on, you know, their computers, they look at the internet, they get the stories in real time. There's not as much need to watch the nightly news because they already know what's happening and they actually probably know it more in depth.
So, Kaylin, are you into the celebrity side? Are you one of the celebrity obsessed?
I am celebrity obsessed, but I need to point out I'm also, you know, in the middle of getting my MBA in graduate school and working full time. And for me, it is wholeheartedly an escape. And it's a great way to find about fashion. If you want to look at family values, you can tell your kids, don't be like Britney Spears.
Right, but no apologies from you. You love it and you need it.
I love it and I need it. And I feel like it's a good, for me, it helps me understand what's important.
What's important? What's important? Are you serious? I mean, you know, whether Lindsay Lohan is back in rehab or not, is that important?
What's important to me is the fact that Lindsay Lohan's life is not important. The fact that Lindsay Lohan is doing all of these really stupid things.
It's very zen.
My life into perspective.
Right. This is true. I mean, it was fabulous. Lindsay passed out in the car at like 5 a.m. That was with her mouth open. That was like a great tabloid moment.
Oh, boy. I don't know. Kaylin, thanks for that. Trish in Boston, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
We're good. What do you think?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment. I am a total chimpanzee. I love to look at beautiful things. One of the reasons I buy all the weekly tabloids is I'm completely addicted. But I don't live vicariously through them. I just kind of like, you know, one of those rubberneckers on the highway. I kind of look at the accidents so that as I drive by. I think that with youth today, it's really sad that they don't glamorize being the CEO of Harvard. I mean, there's these power jobs out there, but the children aren't being exposed to them, that they're, you know, having power is a wonderful thing through using your intellect. It's rather, you know, be 100 pounds or lighter. You know, you have wear the right proper clothes that are being sold at, you know, Bloomingdale's or whatever. It's not going and getting an education. That's not glamorous. And it's just sad. That's all I see.
But Trish, are millions of Americans just, you know, staring at, I don't know, Cameron Diaz frolicking in the Hawaiian surf while the house is burning down?
Yes.
Yes, you say.
Media and that's what media is doing to you. It's a manipulation.
But you're into it. I can hear it. The note says you're addicted to National Enquirer.
I'm addicted because it's escapism for me, but I'm grounded in in reality. I have a full-time job. I have a 4-year-old, and I'm very busy, proactive in helping others. But this is just my form of, my dessert after dinner.
Okay.
I like to have it.
Okay,
right.
We'll take your word for it. We're counting on it. Thanks for that. Let's get a call from Iowa, Vinton, Iowa, and Diane. Diane, you're on the air.
Hi. It's like, what do we expect? I think this is just a continuation of our society as a consumer society. We're valued on what we can buy, not what we can do.
So is this us going to hell in a handbasket, or is it dessert?
I'd take the hell in a handbasket. I certainly did not expect to have this on public radio, and I would not expect to have it on public TV. And a last comment. Can you imagine Edward R. Murrow interviewing Paris Hilton?
It is tough, but I don't know. Ratings matter.
Edward R. Murrow did, in fact, interview the major stars of the day. But that's a really good
Barry
point,
Manilow.
Raising Murrow. Murrow was a product, as all the great newsmen were initially in the early age of television, of World War II and of being abroad, acting as a foreign correspondent. And that's what we're missing right now in our journalism industry. There are fewer and fewer of reporters, okay, who have had that experience abroad, who have actually seen things, observed things. And no one wants to go over to Iraq. There are very few people there on the ground because of the danger of it. So
but plenty of photographers who have staked out the Beverly Hills Hotel, and we heard it. Diane, in Vinton, Iowa, let me ask you. I mean, we debated whether to talk about this and finally decided, this is such a big phenom that to ignore it ignores something important going on with where the American attention is focused. Do you think it's not worth thinking?
I'll give you credit for that.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you've kind of raised yourself up that you're looking at it, not being part of it.
Yeah, well, we don't know where we should stand there exactly. I mean, we're an American show. What do you say, Jake?
Well, I just think that's an excellent point. I mean, can you look at it without being a part of it? And I think the answer is no. I remember when my book came out, they send you on all these, TV shows and stuff, and they would interview me, and I'd be trying to go through my talking points about how girls are picking fame more than intelligence. And, I'd go back and watch it, and all it was is one big video over of Paris Hilton getting out of the limo. And you kind of wring your hands and think, gosh, am I doing any good here? Am I just,
an excuse to bring on the cheesecake?
Exactly, yeah.
Can I say one thing about this fame issue
that
Jake brought up? Because the desire for fame has been part of human history from the start. I mean, after all, the great warrior Achilles, in Homer, chose a short, glorious life of fame, rather than a long, happy life unknown. And Alexander the Great, you have all the great artists of history sought fame. The difference now, is that the fame and celebrity have become detached from mastering a skill, And this is the problem, Fame for its own sake is what's making us kind of queasy.
Fame without skill. Yeah.
To hit on Tom's point of technology again, too, because you think about Alexander the Great and stories of Genghis Khan or Achilles. I mean, they took centuries, if not thousands of years, to kind of saturate in. And I think there was something about these truly had to be great stories to be part of the canon. But now, with the internet and YouTube, it takes nanoseconds. And I think in some ways we've lost the filter that kind of, figures out which stories are worth paying attention to. Because in the snap of a finger, you can be worldwide fame.
In the story, at least, Achilles knew he had to be great to be remembered.
He had to do
something. Let's take a call from Michael in Ames, Iowa. Michael, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I kind of agree with Camille. When you stop and think about the 60s and how each day on the news we were looking at pictures from Vietnam and all the things that were going on there, and in this day and age, now we've got Iraq, we've got a lot of political scandals, and I think it's very much an escapist type attitude, protecting our children from a lot of the violent pictures and things going on in our daily world.
But instead we give them starving starlets, who aren't eating enough and who are drunk and DUI and in jail. I mean, how much is that sparing them? It's sparing them dire blood.
Well, if you stop and think about, for instance, a lot of the pictures back from the early 2000s when, we were showing pictures of dead bodies, such as the sons of Saddam Hussein, you know, it comes down to basically, you know, what's worse or what's better.
Yeah,
And I think that, go ahead.
Michael, let us pick that up. Camille, is there only so much we can take? We have seen, you know, Daniel Pearl beheaded on video, beheadings on television. Yeah. I mean, have we just been pushed to where people need to snap back?
When the Philadelphia Inquirer, for example, you know, puts a photo of the, you know, charred bodies of our, you know, of our men sort of hanging from, dangling from
Fallujah.
A bridge and so on.
Yeah,
and people, you know, felt it was inappropriate for that to be seen by small children. So there are those issues of that the immediacy of our news, the quickness with which these images can be, you know, injected into the home, and it has made people maybe, you know, turn off in a way. But another thing, though, is that, you know, like the major news weeklies have degenerated more and more lifestyle cover stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up reading Time magazine, like the Bible, in the 1950s and 1960s, and the stress on international news was really remarkable. Now, for international news today, I have to turn to NPR at midnight. Is the, you know, the BBC World Service is being broadcast? But, and wow, because of the heritage of the British Empire, wow, does that production really touch the bases of countries and cultures all over the world?
We hear that, and yet we know you love the other stuff. You write this efflorescence, talking about Lindsay Lohan, of her ho-hum fleece hoodie and sneakers mode, followed by the prankish surfacing of eye-opening photos of a visibly hazy but magnetically glowing Lohan horsing around with kitchen knives and kinky lesbo sex play, and ooh, there
we
are.
That's me you're reading.
Yes.
I love the spectacle of pop. It is decadent, okay? But I also try to inform myself on a daily basis of what's happening in the world.
After her release from jail last month, Paris Hilton spoke with CNN's Larry King about her reputation as a party girl.
I just like to go out and have fun with my friends. I'm an Aquarius. We're social people.
You're going to stop doing that? Can you change that?
You know, I've realized that there's a lot more important things in life.
I'm an Aquarius. We're social people. All right. Jake Halpern is with us. He's author of Fame Junkies. Camille Paglia is with us, one of America's foremost cultural critics, columnist now for Salon.com, author of Sex, Art, and American Culture, Vamps and Tramps, and a whole lot more. And right now, from Los Angeles, we're joined by Perez Hilton himself, Mario Lavandera, a.k.a. Perez Hilton. PerezHilton.com is his website. The New York Times calls him the reigning online gossip maven. Perez Hilton, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What do people love on your website? What most keeps them coming?
The simplest answer is content. You know, people like coming to my website knowing that there will be something new every time. You know, the internet, the more content you have, the more traffic you'll get. So I work really hard to update the website. So that's the simplest answer.
So we've got, I just checked in this morning, we have a luscious and corpulent Val Kilmer chowing down at the Rainbow in West Hollywood over the weekend. Okay. Katie Holmes out with her baby. You say right at the top of your website, Paris Hilton, if you don't like it, don't come back. Who doesn't like it these days?
Well, I was on The View last week, and the ladies there had some disagreements with certain things I do and how I communicate with the masses.
Like what?
Well, you know, they mentioned how I shouldn't talk about the children of celebrities, you know, because a two-year-old's going to be really upset about what I write. But, you know, sometimes I want to push the envelope, as I said on the show, and I want to be offensive. And, you know, ultimately, I'm just there to entertain myself. If other people enjoy what I do, then great. But the only person that I have to answer to is me.
They seem to enjoy it quite a lot, people coming back and back. I mean, how do you think the web is going to affect over time, Perez, our interaction with the stars? We can come to you sort of any minute of the day for the latest snapshot. Where does that take us?
I think that, you know, I love it. You know, I love that the notion of celebrity is very different now than it was 5 years ago or even 3 years ago. You know, nowadays, anyone can be a celebrity. It's really changed from your 15 minutes of fame to your 15 seconds of fame. Fame has become this kind of niche thing. It's very compartmentalized. You can be really famous to a group of people, yet the majority may have no idea who you are. For example, there's this woman by the name of Vida Guerra, whom I'm assuming you've never heard of.
I haven't. Are we making a new star right now as we speak?
Well, she is a star. Vida Guerra is this voluptuous model who is on the cover of all those men's magazines. Like, almost every month, it seems, she's on the cover of Stuff, FHM, Maxim.
Okay, yeah, the real cheesecakey bikini stuff.
So to the readers of those publications, she's a superstar. Yet, I'd venture to say that most Americans have no idea who she is.
Mm. Paris, let me ask you, are you a sign of the end times? Are you the great despoiler of American democracy? Are you diverting all of our minds down into rubbish that doesn't matter?
No, I think that people have always been interested in celebrities. For centuries, I mean, the royals were the celebrities of their time. Now actors and silly people are the royals of our time.
We've got callers for you. Allie's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Allie, you're on the air with Perez Hilton.
Hi, Dom. Thanks.
Hi. Yeah.
I am a huge reader. I check Perez Hilton about 12 times a day, probably, because you're just constantly updating. And, you know, I think it's really pertinent to say that I'd say a majority of your stuff is negative on the site. And that's sort of what I love, and that all these people have so much that I'll never have, cars and money and good-looking spouses. It's sometimes really gratifying and great to see when they come down, you know.
So you want the dirt. You want the close-up of the cellulite. You want the bad stuff.
Yes, exactly. And Fred gives that. And, you know, I don't know. I think that I check his blog 12 times a day, but I also read the New York Times. I don't think it has to be exclusionary, you know, one way or the other.
Right. Right. And you need it a dozen times a day. Allie, thanks for that. Perez, there's a fan.
Well, lovely. I love all my readers.
but what are you doing for them, ultimately? Entertaining them, putting them to sleep, giving them a dream life?
I like to consider what I do is infotaining them. You know, I provide information in an entertaining way. And I consider what I do to be noble. You know, a lot of people may dismiss what I do as being trivial or even negative, but I know that I'm getting almost 6 million readers a day, and they enjoy it. So the fact that I'm bringing enjoyment to people's lives gives what I do meaning.
Camille Paglia, what do you say to the reigning online gossip maven of the world, of the web, Paris Hilton?
I'm delighted to be on the line with him. I check him daily. Now I feel guilty not checking him more often. But Paris is simply in the main line of Luella Parsons, Hedda Hopper, all those great Hollywood gossip columnists. It's just that he does it primarily with images, which are extremely interesting.
With funny comments, cutting comments,
and
right?
And he puts yum on them, okay, to show his own sensibility.
Right. Right. On Gwen Stefani, I'm looking at here today. Jake Halpern, how about you? Thumbs up, thumbs down? Is this the despoiler of all that virtue stands for, or something else?
No, I think Perez's site is great, and I think that, you know, there's no problem there. I think that people have always gone to whatever their favorite tabloid or their favorite celebrity magazine is. I see the problem much more when the New York Times art section covers the latest spat between Donald Trump and Rosie O'Donnell in kind of every bit of detail, and by the way, often not as cleverly as Perez. So my gripe is really mainly with kind of the more traditional mainstream news that is kind of pandered to this and kind of – so even when we don't want it, we stumble upon it.
But here's a blog talk with the Times culture editor Sam Sifton. He justifying the Perez Hilton coverage. He says, you know, the smart aleck response to that question is that she is the preeminent performance artist of our age. Paris Hilton, where does all this go? Are you going to sort of find new ways to get this into our eyeballs and ears and minds? Or where are you headed?
Well, I'm heading to television. I'm very excited about that. I have a show that I'm doing with VH1.
Oh,
it's a series of one-hour specials that premieres in September. But I think the reason why celebrity news has become mainstream news is because of a business decision. You know, the mainstream media has realized how profitable it can be to discuss celebrities, and they can sell more ads on their newscast, they can sell more ads in their papers and magazines, and they'll have more readers. So that's the honest answer, I think.
Money, ka-ching. Yep. I have to let Perez go, but Perez Hilton, it was fascinating to have you and speak with you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mario Lavandera, a.k.a. Perez with a Z, Hilton at PerezHilton.com. Hey, every snapshot in the book right there. Jake, I heard you.
Yeah. You know, one thing that springs to mind is in the survey I did of all these teenagers, I had a written-in part where I could say, what do you like about reading YM or Tiger Beat or Teen People or a lot of the publications that are geared towards young people?
Yeah.
And I was struck by how often they wrote in, when I see this stuff, it makes me feel like one day I'll be in their shoes, or it makes me able to envision what it's going to be like when I am in their shoes.
A celebrity or just rich and successful or both? What?
Both. I think either often a celebrity or kind of a VIP of kind of not exactly clear. But when I want to add one other point that I think narcissism has something to do with this. And there's this interesting personality test called the Narcissism Personality Index, which supposedly measures how narcissistic you are.
Okay.
Because it asks you these questions like, if I ran the world, it would be a better place. When I go up, right. When I show up at the party, things really get started,
yeah.
Kind of all of these things. And then at the end, it gives you a score. Well, anyway, they've given this test to people all over the world, and no demographic group in the world scores higher on this than the American teenager. And I think that this part of the reason that it
how's it relate? What's it mean? What's it have to do with celebrity obsession, culture?
I think that young people watch this stuff and they think, this is going to be me. I'm going to have a piece of this myself. It's the glorification of the individual. It's bow down and worship. It's not just looking at it as something other than you.
Yeah.
It's looking at it and saying, this is going to be me.
Of course.
But this is the result of decades, primary education focused on self-esteem rather than on introduction to history, geography, and fact.
And around, and pretty soon we all imagine ourselves as celebrities. We are so self-esteemed up. Jason's calling from West Hartford, Connecticut. Jason, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, there's a book Daniel J. Boorstin had written. It was published in 1961 called The Image. And I think it's interesting because he explored all the points being made here today.
All the way back in the 1960s. So it's hardly new that we've got an obsession.
Right. He collectively termed all of this the pseudo-event. And I guess they're just events that are created basically to be reported, which, of course, includes celebrities and whatnot.
Right, and we had Neil Postman with Amusing Ourselves to Death a decade or more ago.
An important book.
A big one. But Jason, let me ask you, do you see a different scale now or different ubiquity to the celebrity obsession?
Absolutely, and I think the point that he made that really resonates today is the fact that the more we look at these pseudo events, the more we become immersed in them because of our attraction to illusion. We love these images, so we can't get away from them. Even with a measured disinterest, we look at these images and they just overwhelm us. So no matter what we do, our best intentions to escape it, we can't.
Pseudo events at a time when the world is really calling, the real world really calling for our attention. Let's go to Alex in Wayland, Massachusetts. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
We're pretty good, we think. What do you think?
Well, I was just saying earlier, I mean, I don't really understand the point of jumping down the throat of people like Paris Hilton because, I mean, he's got a business. He's trying to make money. And as he says, if you don't like it, don't come back.
Don't come back, right?
But the problem is really there's no separation between hard news and soft news anymore, especially in, like, actual news media outlets.
Right.
Like you were talking before about having Paris Hilton on Larry King. What is Paris Hilton doing on Larry King? He should be having, you know, like political figures.
Yeah, but let me ask you this. That point's been made several times, but the point's also been made that people's eyeballs are going to the celebrity news, not the traditional, what we traditionally think of as news. So it's not just the bleed over, is it? Isn't it, Alex, that we as Americans are voluntarily turning our attention in greater and greater numbers to the pseudo world, pseudo events?
Well, I guess it comes down to whether you think that the news is there to inform people or to entertain people. Because, I mean, the problem now is that news is there to sell itself, and they know what sells. They know that celebrity sells. But journalism is still the fourth state. They still need to be reporting on things that are actually happening. And there's a great documentary by Bill Moyers called, I think it's the Path to War or something like that. Mm-hmm. It really shows how the news media just turned and ran in the other direction in the build-up to the Iraq War, and because they were focusing on things like Martha Stewart or whatever was going on back at the time back then.
Right. Alex, thanks for that. Camille, do the walls ever go back up once they're down and the celebrities are frolicking among the sort of what we think of as real newsmakers? They're all sort of out there on the stage. Do they ever get distinguished again?
Well, as a teacher, I'm just very concerned that our technological prowess is such that middle class young people really do move in a bubble of virtual reality. They have had seen nothing, experienced nothing, basically in their lives. I'm very concerned about the future over the next century as this country has to confront the threat of terrorism and young people moving into the professional class who have very little sense, of the basic facts of geopolitics.
Robert's calling from Coventry, Rhode Island. Robert, you're on the air.
I find all of this is just a major distraction from the things that people would normally look at and try to take care of in their lives. I have a couple of people that I work with that, when all the Anna Nicole scandal was going on, I watched two gentlemen practically get into a physical fight over who the father of the baby was, and yet they couldn't name their local politicians, they couldn't even tell you what's going on a national level in the news, and if that's the direction we're going towards, it's disgusting. Thank you.
Got it, Robert. A fist fight over who's the daddy of Anna Nicole's baby, while the planet burns. I don't know. Jake, how do we pull the needle out a little bit here?
I don't know. I wish I had some sort of easy answer for you. I think that, we addressed this point earlier in the show where whether, talking about this issue just adds to the roar or whether it raises some awareness. And you got to hope that just that people kind of keep some sense of balance. And a lot of the callers who called in today said, yeah, I go to Paris.com. I read Us Weekly, but I also read the New York Times.
And
I
hold down a job and do good in the world.
Right, and it brings in the whole addiction metaphor, which is, you're an addict when your need for something overpowers everything else and kind of runs your life into the ground. And I think as long as you're able to, we all have our escapism highs. It might be science fiction, it might be the movies, it might be a novel, it might be Paris Hilton. As long as we can do that but then kind of pull back and still be able to tell you what's going on in Darfur, I think we're all right.
But I think parents have a responsibility also, to make sure that that their children are exposed to a wide variety of culture and not just the boob tube. Okay, when you have the TV now being used as a babysitting device in very earliest years, I think that's where it's all starting. In Europe, European primary education really does introduce young people to the history of the visual arts, alternate images. They have stood the test of time. And that's, of course, part of their own heritage. Over here, it's an effort, and our schools have failed miserably to introduce the arts to young people. What we need to do is not to attack the media, but rather to look at the gaps in society that has allowed the media to expand to this degree.
Well, I'm looking here. Associated Press, Valentine's Day announced it wasn't going to cover Paris Hilton anymore in this February. Before the end of the month, they had surrendered and they were back on the Paris Hilton beat. It is powerful. It is hard to ignore. Camille Paglia, it's always wonderful speaking with you. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Camille Paglia at the University of the Arts in Pennsylvania, columnist for Salon.com and author of many great books. Jake Halperin, author of Fame Junkies, joining us today from New Haven, Connecticut. Jake, good to make your acquaintance. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.